Look up. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's an air taxi. Lifting off and landing vertically, the Whisk Air Taxi is practically science fiction already. And that's even before you find out that it's all electric and self-flying. We delve into the innovative flying machine that's starting to take off. And could young people be at the forefront of the next scientific discovery? NASA is offering a chance for middle school and high school students to work with professional engineers on a science project. And those projects will then get a spot on a NASA-sponsored commercial flight on a high-altitude balloon or rocket-powered lander. We'll take a look at that and meet some of the winners of last year's challenge. Fox 11 News In-Depth blasts off. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In-Depth. Today, we're looking up into the sky. Our eyes are going to be up there as we talk about innovation in science and aerospace. NASA's calling on students in middle and high schools to submit experiments for the third TechRise Student Challenge. So what is the TechRise Challenge? To tell us more about that is Anh Nguyen, the NASA TechRise Technical Lead. Hello, Anh. And okay, what is it?
Hello, thanks for having me. Yeah, so NASA Flight Opportunities TechRise Student Challenge aims to inspire the next Artemis generation by providing them with firsthand experiences and confidence to further and explore their passions in STEM. So students grades 6 through 12 will go through the same processes that NASA and other researchers do, coming up with an idea, developing an experiment for space exploration or Earth science, and flying that experiment on a NASA-sponsored flight test on a high-altitude balloon or rocket-powered lander vehicle.
You know, I've been always one of those kids that wanted to be in the science festivals and competitions and fascinated by NASA and JPL. And so I'm excited about this show. Who are the sponsors for TechRise?
Yeah, so this is NASA and NASA's specifically Flight Opportunities program that is out of Armstrong Research Center.
And who can apply? What's the deadline? What kind of projects are we talking about?
Yeah, so the competition is open to students grades 6 through 12 who attend a U.S. public, private, or charter school, including those in U.S. territories or tribally controlled schools. And the students will need to form a team with at least four students and have one team lead, which is usually a teacher or school employee. And that team lead will need to register on a website and submit the application on the behalf of the students. So the challenge website has all of the resources that any student team needs to apply, and no prior experience is required. Submissions are due on Monday, November 13th, and really it's not that long. It's only three pages, and it really responds to the application of what, how, and why, and what their experiment consists of. And so challenge winners will receive $1,500, a flight box in which to build it, and an assigned spot to test their experiment on the NASA flight.
And November 13th, I think you said, isn't that far away, right?
That's correct. It is in about 2 weeks.
Yeah. So if a group of students comes up with a project, what kind of help do they get from the TechRise program?
Yeah, so NASA has our administrating challenge group from future engineers, and they will help mentor each of the teams to make their experiments come to life. So hands-on experience, coding experience, soldering, trying to make sure that their experiment meets the flight vehicle's needs and safety requirements. And so we provide mentorship from start to finish and really make sure that the students have their experiments to be successful.
And then these things go actually up into a NASA rocket or a balloon. Can you give us just a very brief explanation of that, because we're running out of time?
Yeah, the students can choose a balloon or a rocket-powered lander vehicle. And so that balloon will happen at the end of the school year for the summer. And the balloon will go up to around 95,000 feet, or the rocket-powered lander vehicle will actually traverse a simulated moon terrain for about 2 minutes and give the payloads the experience environments of space to test their experiments.
Wow. How interesting, how exciting. And Anh Nguyen, thanks so much for joining us. The website for entries, futureengineers.org/NASA tech rise. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we talked to a bunch of student scientists about their experience with the NASA Tech Rise program and the experiment they came up with and worked on with NASA engineers. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and boy, do we have a segment for you right now. During the 2021-22 school year, five seventh grade students at Sachs Middle School in Connecticut entered this national competition held by future engineers in NASA. Their group was one of 57 winners of the Tech Rise Challenge, which was an experiment that was taken up on NASA's high-altitude balloon for testing. All right, so I'm not going to promise that I'm going to get everybody's name right, but let's give it the old college try here, because we have Kevin D'Alton, who's the teacher over here with a hand up in the air. And these are some of your middle school students, right? So all of you, just raise your hand. All of you are in the ninth grade? Yes?
Yeah.
Ninth grade. Started this in the seventh grade. And so of the students, we have Megan Ratner, Marjorie Nerzia. That's good. Wait. Mariana Zepeda, Oscar Goldegger, and Sophia Sibilia. These are former students of Sachs Middle School who have now moved on to ninth grade, but the group won last year's Tech Rise Challenge. So let's find out a little bit about that. First of all, Kevin, congratulations to all of you. And tell us a little bit, Kevin, about how the idea came up that this group ended up entering into the Tech Rise Challenge.
So the challenge was presented to me. I got it through an email, and I presented it to my class. And then this group of students decided to take up that challenge. And they were the rest was their idea, and I was just there to facilitate. So everything else after I presented that challenge was really up to them, and I was just there to help with everything along the way.
So the students, let's start with Megan. Megan, raise your hand. Wave a little bit. There you go, Megan. And tell us a little bit about the project and you know, what does it have to do with colors?
So our idea was we wanted to see if color changed differently as you go higher in our atmosphere. And color is perceived differently, like in your life. it affects your mood, it affects a lot of things. And we want to see if ever we end up, for example, on Mars, if we want to see if color would change, if that would affect humans at all if we ever decided to go up there.
All right. Mariana, wave. There you go. How did you guys come up with this project, and what did you hope to learn?
So we just kind of, Maggie actually came up with this idea. And, you know, we just all agreed on it. And it was simply out of curiosity. We didn't really have a set like goal that we wanted to learn, but it was just kind of for fun, and it was a great learning experience for all of us.
Now, Marjorie, raise your hand.
Hi.
There you go. Is that the project in front of you?
Yes, it is.
Give us a little show and tell.
Okay, so here is, I don't know if you can see it that well, but over here is like where all the coding, this is where all like the magic happens, you know? We've got this little board over here hooked up to this camera, which is pointed down at this little color card down here. So that's going to take videos, short little videos of it as it goes further up into the atmosphere. And basically at the end, we put it into a program and it analyzes how the color changed based on how far up you went in the atmosphere. Pretty cool.
All right. Well, let's ask a couple of group questions. Raise your hand. How many of you have always been interested in science? All of you. Okay, great. And how many of you knew about this Tech Rise Challenge before you got into it? No, I see people going, no. So once you got into this, did you ever think that you'd end up having such a successful, you know, outcome? Marjorie, you want to pick it up?
I really don't think we could have predicted that we would win and, like, come this far, but I think we're glad that we did.
Oscar, what was the toughest part of all of this?
Toughest part of all of it was
getting everything together, getting it working in a final state, and not trying to, oh, let's do some, not trying to overachieve, and just sticking to the basics, getting the basic idea down, and then someone else in the future could build off that idea.
Sophia, question for you. Yeah. What did you hope to gain from this part of the project? Is it too early for you to be thinking about something like this to resume?
Well, I've always thought that this was really interesting. And this was very interesting, and I might I hope other people pick it up when they get this opportunity, because it was a very, not challenging, but an interesting opportunity, and we had a lot of fun doing it.
You know, let me ask Kevin, for people who might be watching and might have some level of interest, just seeing what you guys have done, what would you tell them? What would you suggest to them about this program?
I think it was a great opportunity for students to find what they're passionate about and kind of explore different avenues of science, because there were so many aspects to this. There was the coding, the actual building of it, the soldering of the microcontroller or the Arduino that was going in there. And it kind of gave everyone an opportunity to have a different role to play in this experiment and kind of see where they would fit or what they liked about this aspect of science in this challenge.
You know, I know you're not done yet, and you still have to analyze your findings and all that sort of thing. So why don't you, who wants to pick up this question? Just raise your hand. What comes next, Oscar?
Well, so when we got it back, it was supposed to take photos, but ended up taking videos. So in total, it started recording when the balloon started taking off on the ground, that's when it started recording. And then once it started, and I think it cuts off the recording once it starts decreasing in altitude. Once it starts that decrease, that's when it cuts it off. And so now with the footage that we have, we're gonna use this. We're going to use the software called ImageJ. It's really cool. It's used a lot in biology for like studying organic stuff. But in this situation, as you saw earlier, we have the color card there. And what I'm going to try, I haven't figured it out yet, but what we're going to do is we're going to track the color of, yeah, there it is. We're going to track the color of each color, and then we're going to track the color around the color card. So not only are we keeping track on the colors, but we're also keeping on the lighting.
When I was about your age, I was, and that was 150 or so years ago. But when I was about your age, I used to love science. I used to love to do these science projects. I really looked forward to them. And I'm going to guess, nod your heads, but I'm going to guess every single one of you have always sort of had a thing for science projects in school. Is that right?
Science. Interesting.
Yeah. And who's going to be an astronaut? Raise your hand. How about you, teacher, Kevin? You going to be an astronaut someday?
I don't think I'm prepared for that. That's the starting date.
Well, what I can tell you is you got to be in pretty good shape. I'm not, so it's not going to happen for me either. But I want to wish all of you all the best. I think it's very exciting when these projects come along and you get an opportunity to do these things. And one more little note. Years ago, there was a young lady named Clara Ma, who was from the Midwest, and she entered a contest with NASA, and the contest was to name a rover, and she named the rover Curiosity, and she won. And I know her still to this day. So there's exciting stuff ahead. I wish you all the best. Thanks for being with us here on Fox 11 News In Depth. And coming up next on our show, we're going to talk about an aerial taxi that lands and launches vertically. Pretty innovative, right? But that's not even the surprising part. When we come back, we take a look at the Whisk Air Taxi and what it can do. Don't go away. We'll be right back. If you're old enough to remember this, you'll know that we all hoped for the future, including something like this. And if you've been shaking your fist at the sky and yelling, "Where's my flying car?" you're going to love this segment. Take a look at this thing called the Whisk. It's an electric, autonomous, four-seater flying taxi. Hard to believe this could actually be part of our transportation infrastructure, but it's undergoing testing right now. Let's welcome Becky Tanner. She's the Chief Marketing Officer for Whisk. Thanks for being with us, Becky. Good to see you. And is it like
good
the
to
Jetsons?
See you as well.
Is it like the Jetsons?
Not quite. You know, that's a way off into the distant future of people having their own personal area vehicles. What we're developing at Whisk is a four-passenger, fully autonomous, vertical takeoff and landing aircraft that will carry passengers in urban areas. So it will take off and land like a helicopter, but fly like a plane. And it's all electric. And as I mentioned, it is fully autonomous. And so these are being designed for urban transportation to help people get to their destinations in a much more quicker manner and also with more predictability.
And how exactly does that work? I mean, we're in Los Angeles. We're in a freeway city of the world.
Yeah, you are. And this is a perfect market for this type of technology to come and give people some freedom of choice and decrease in their commute. So, for example, this aircraft will take off and land from places called vertiports, or in the short term, likely existing infrastructure like helipads or airports, and then it will take people to their destination. Passengers will pre-book their flight, so this won't be necessarily on demand at the very beginning, but people will be able to reserve their spot and be able to figure out where they wanna fly. So using your local area as an example, getting from Long Beach to say LAX can take quite a long time, and the traffic is really unpredictable. But if you were to catch a Whisk, you could get to that destination in 7 minutes. So you could save at least 40 minutes of time, typically.
You know, we've had stories here lately, and I don't want to throw much of a downer at this, but you should be able to answer this. We've seen these autonomous cars, the Waymos, the Cruises. We've had issues, even in the just past couple of weeks, where Cruises were banned from San Francisco because of a terrible accident in which somebody was dragged under one of those vehicles. And so, how are you being sure these are safe? How can we be sure these things are safe and comfortable and we're not going to end up with some kind of an unexpected problem?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. And it's really top of mind for us at Whisk. So I will start by saying Whisk will only begin operations once the FAA has certified our aircraft and our operations to and deemed them to be safe for passenger transport. So that's number one. I also think something that's really special about Whisk is that we're designing our aircraft to meet or exceed the highest commercial aviation standards. So what that means is when you're stepping on board a Whisk aircraft, you can expect the same safety standards that you experience when you're jumping on a commercial airplane going from state to state or coast to coast. Commercial aviation has the highest track record in terms of safety. And that's what we're aiming for as well, because we think that's absolutely important.
All right, but there's one big difference here. In a commercial jet, you got a pilot and a co-pilot. You don't in these things. They're driverless or flyerless.
Yes, they are self-flying or autonomous. That's absolutely true. However, even though there is no pilot on board or no pilot controls, there's absolutely a human that is watching our flights from the ground. We call that a multi-vehicle supervisor. So they are supervising these flights to make sure that they are safe and operating as planned. Also, with a push of a button, a passenger can get in contact with somebody on the ground. But keep in mind, these are really short trips, right? We're not putting people in an autonomous aircraft craft for hours at a time. These are 15 to 20 minute journeys typically. And so these will be quick trips. And we think that these will become boring for people in terms of not having a pilot on board once they get comfortable.
Is it kind of like having an oversized drone that operates by remote control?
No, this is an aircraft. We don't view this as a drone. This has commercial levels of aviation safety. We have a human supervisor on the ground supervising, but they're not remotely piloting this aircraft.
How much testing has been done so far, and when do you expect these to become available?
Yeah, really great question. So we've been testing and flying aircraft for a long time. We originally started in 2010, and since we have designed six different generations of aircraft, and we're currently working on our certification program for the sixth generation. Our current aircraft, we've tested over 1,700 times without an incident. So the process will be very rigorous with the FAA, as it should be, to certify our sixth generation aircraft. And that will take several years of testing and lots of data sharing before these ever go up into the air and carry passengers safely to their destination.
Let's talk about costs. We only have a minute left. And, you know, I know Uber and Lyft, they've gone up and up and up. What do you anticipate costs will be for these?
Yeah. So one of the things that's really important to WISC is that our aircraft is accessible. And when we mean accessible, we mean it for people with disabilities and also for a large percentage of our population. So because we're competing with ground transportation, we're trying to save people meaningful time, and we want them to stitch this into their everyday lives. That price point needs to be competitive. So we're really looking towards, aiming towards Uber competitive pricing.
So in other words, you're going to try to be at the same price point as what's going along the ground in rideshare?
That is the ultimate goal, yes.
All right. Becky Tanner, where can people read more about this?
WISC.aero. Please check us out. Follow us on social media. There's a lot of really interesting content out there, some great photos and videos. Please get engaged. We're really excited for people to learn more.
All right. I want to keep in touch with you guys because I grew up to the Jetsons, and I want to see how this goes. All right.
Me too. Good.
Becky Tanner, right. Thanks so much. We'll have more Fox 11 News in depth coming up right after this break. Don't go away. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.